Hello, I'm Keith Perron, and welcome to Focus Asia Pacific. Tensions are rising in Solomon Islands over the encroachment onto Guadalcanal provincial lands of residents from the capital, Honiara. Illegal squatting was one of the major causes of ethnic crisis, which tore the country apart in the late 1990s and early 2000s. And as the new premier of Guadalcanal province, Anthony Veca, says, the worsening squatter problem is once again reaching critical levels. Mr. Veca told Corey Hawkins the government and people want them off provincial land around the city limits, but calls for national government intervention have fallen on deaf ears.
The situation is getting worse at the moment. The level of migration into Honiara continue to increase, and as Honiara experiences heavy influx of people, the squattering around the town boundary also increases. And the problem continues to increase at the moment, and it puts a lot of pressure on the provincial governments to make sure that we set some strategies or methods of control in getting people squattering within the provincial jurisdiction. And we believe this is not the role of the provincial government only. It's a role of the central government, the Honiara City Council, and any other authority that are responsible in the influx of people coming. So my belief is that the problem is getting worse, and it needs the attention of for relevant authorities.
And what kind of solutions do the Guadalcanal people want? Do you want people off the land back into the city boundaries, or some form of registration of the land and payment of rent? What are the options available to solve the issue?
Well, the people of Guadalcanal would like to see that if people are coming from other provinces because of opportunities here in Honiara, then they should be within Honiara's jurisdiction, not in Guadalcanal. The fact that they are going out of the Honiara's jurisdiction is not welcoming or from the people of Guadalcanal. So the people feel that squattering within Guadalcanal jurisdiction is not right, and those people who are squattering within Guadalcanal land should be able to go back to where they can go, and like Honiara is the only place that they can go. People feel that they should leave those lands, and we know that some of those lands are alienated and they are owned by investors, some private individuals. But my government and also the people, we don't want to see increase of squattering in those on those lands.
You mentioned approaching this being a shared responsibility and a national interest in terms of resolving this. Have the government, the national government, been responsive to your calls?
Well, we have been calling on the government to assist in addressing this matter for a while. The government is not responding as we expected, but we can't stop bringing this matter to their attention. It is the interest of my people, and as far as my government is concerned, we have to represent the wishes of my people. So there's a very slow and maybe lack of commitment on the part of the central government and other authorities in addressing this issue, and which is to me, I feel that it's not right for relevant authority and the central government to brush aside the issue of squattering on Guadalcanal's land or on Guadalcanal's jurisdiction. It has to be some kind of seriousness in addressing this issue of squattering on GP's jurisdiction.
Finally, is there any risk of violence or tensions arising from this current situation?
Well, I don't want to be seen that I'm advocating some type of behavior here, but but the chances of the recurrence of incidences that we don't want is there. There is potential of disagreements, there's potential of conflict, and we can't rule out conflict between the land-owning tribes, the people who claim who owns the land, and the people who are squatting on those lands. We have to foresee the risks that are ahead of us. And if we want Solomon Islands and Guam for that matter to be peaceful, we have to address those risks that is ahead of those situations.
A Fiji lawyer who lodged a complaint about alleged torture by security forces has had his offices ransacked. Amen Ravinder Singh, who is defending a group of people on sedition charges, had his Lokoto offices broken into on Good Friday, as well as the ongoing intimidation towards him since last year. He says he alleges his colleagues have also been subject to torture. He told Johnny Blades about the latest disturbing episode at his office.
The main entrance, the door the glass was smashed in, that was the mode of entry into the office. And a certain furniture was broken, and also there was more glass partitions smashed inside the office. The entire place was trashed, drawers were open, and things were thrown about, certain files were ripped, and files were scattered all over the place in the offices, in the reception area. It was a horrible sight. From the door onwards, the entire office was littered with files and legal documentation.
So files definitely have been gone through. You're still considering what's actually missing.
Well, the staff and I are auditing all that may be missing. We have compiled a list. Until I give that list to the police, I won't make it public yet. But I can confirm that there are certain things missing from the office. And we are still going through files to determine or to come to a conclusion what if anything else has gone missing.
Has this ever happened to you or your officers before?
Well, this is in fact the second break-in in 2 months.
Similar kind of stuff? Ransacked the office, gone through files?
No, the first break-in was nothing similar to what has happened. First one was a very different sort of break-in. There was no forced entry, and the CCTV had been cut for 10 minutes. And my laptop was stolen on that occasion.
It's well known you are representing, I think, dozens of people who are before the Fiji courts on sedition charges, and you have made complaints about harassment before, is that right?
Yes, those complaints have been made, and a certain amount of harassment continues till to date. It's common knowledge that the security forces have been behind all forms of intimidation, harassment, and torture in this country, and beatings. So it's not like there's going to be a sudden change as to who's behind all these unlawful activities. But as I've mentioned earlier, and I've continued to say this in the last so many months, those responsible for the intimidation, harassment, and beatings, brutality, and torture, obviously, it all points to the same band of people, and those are the members of the security forces.
Well, many people are putting their attention on the Zika virus in Brazil, which is a disease passed on from mosquitoes, an airborne disease. Now, it's not just the only place, actually, that's having a problem with mosquitoes. Scientists in French Polynesia say an ambitious experiment to control mosquito populations is proving to be very successful and could change the way countries prevent mosquito-borne illnesses like Zika. Hervé Bossin and his team from the Institut Louis Maladi, the territory's public research institute, have released sterilized Polynesian tiger mosquitoes on the atoll of the Tetutoria to try to prevent breeding. He says that in 6 months, the private island of the late Hollywood star Marlon Brando has seen its mosquito population drop dramatically. He told Jamie Tahanaha that if successful, the process could become one of the most effective ways for Pacific countries to fight against diseases like dengue fever and others.
The mosquito project that is happening right now, it's a trial that seeks for the suppression of one of the very important disease mosquito vectors in the Pacific Islands. It's called the Polynesian tiger mosquito, and its Latin name is Aedes polynesiensis. It's a major vector of lymphatic filariasis and other diseases such as dengue and obviously Zika and chikungunya that have recently affected the Pacific region. This mosquito is abundant in most populated islands of French Polynesia, and also it goes all over from Samoa, Fiji, and Cook Islands all the way to Pitcairns on the eastern end of the Polynesian Triangle. And so we've developed innovative strategy to try to better control this mosquito, which is otherwise very difficult to control using conventional methods and tools for mosquito vector control.
So these conventional methods via the programs that are on right now of, you know, clearing water areas and spraying and stuff, isn't it? Are they quite ineffective?
So what we need to know about Aedes polynesiensis, it's a mosquito vector that is essentially present in suburban areas, the national forest, rural areas. And so it is difficult to control because there is a number of natural breeding sites that this mosquito breeds in. And that includes coconuts that are chewed by rats, holes in trees that you will have a very difficult, you know, time getting rid of. And they're also present in numerous areas where we don't essentially live, and that would be very difficult to manage in terms of, you know, environmental management. And so it's unlikely also that you will be spraying in those natural areas where the mosquito is thriving.
And so this experiment, what are you trying to do to be able to get this mosquito?
Right. So we have developed a very innovative approach, which can be integrated to existing tools. It is based on basically sterilizing male mosquitoes. What you need to know is that male mosquitoes, unlike female mosquitoes, they don't bite. They're not a source of any nuisance. They don't transmit diseases. So you can essentially release as many as you want, and that will not cause any nuisance around where we are present. We are using a biological approach that is based on the use of a tiny bacteria called Wolbachia. Wolbachia is present in a number of insect species, including butterflies, honeybees, and a number of mosquito species as well. And we're harnessing the properties of this small bacteria for the purpose of our innovative vector control strategy. Essentially, because Wolbachia is present under different strains in different species, different strains of Wolbachia don't do well together in a single species. So when a male and a female carry different Wolbachia strains, and when they mate, the result of the mating is not compatible. In other words, the male carrying the Wolbachia that we have developed in the colony in the lab is going to sterilize the female. This female will lay eggs that will never hatch as a result of the incompatibility between the two Wolbachia strains in the embryo.
Okay, so it's pretty much a biological approach to clear out populations of mosquitoes.
Yes. So the mosquitoes we're releasing, their genome, their genes have not been modified in any ways. And the Wolbachia bacteria that we are using in this mosquito is neither modified. It's not genetically transformed in any way. So it's a very natural approach. So it's shown to be very efficient so far. We started to release a fairly large number of males in a test field on Techaroa since September of last year, and we've observed the gradual suppression and collapse of the treated area, you know, the treated mosquito population that we are targeting in Techaroa.
And how long does it take for that target population to collapse? Is it, say, if there's an outbreak of something, how quickly would it work?
We started the releases in September, just before the start of the rainy season, when the population of mosquitoes is at its lowest. And so that helped us with the production and the releases. We were facing a lower number of mosquitoes to begin with, which is strategically better. It took just a few weeks, 4 to 6 weeks, to start to see the start of the collapse of the targeted mosquito population. And we've maintained the releases for that number of months because there is a number of eggs that are present. It's like an egg bank that are naturally present. And we're waiting for those eggs to hatch as a result of the rainfall so that they can emerge as adults and the females can be sterilized. And we need to deplete this egg bank before we can claim for a successful elimination in the Motu.
Okay, so it's quite effective from what you've done so far.
It's been very effective. We're really, really happy with the outcome of the program so far. The program will continue until the end of 2016. We will probably end the releases at some point in May, maybe July, depending on the outcome and the results we get from the monitoring of mosquitoes we do on a regular basis. Depending on what we see in terms of mosquito recovery in our traps. And there's very few today coming into our traps. There are very few remaining in the field. And we will monitor those mosquitoes for a period of time to determine how sustainable the whole approach is.
And you are listening to Focus Asia Pacific, coming to you from PCJ Radio International. Many of Fiji's cyclone victims are still in dire need of shelter, especially with the onslaught of heavy rain over the last few days. Sally Round has been out with the aid organization Samaritan's Purse, which has been distributing all kinds of temporary housing to villagers around Latuka. She spoke to team leader Stuart Beveridge.
My impression is that these people are resilient. They do their very best with what they have, and they need our support and our help.
Today you've been distributing quite a simple item, a tarpaulin. How have they been received?
Joyfully. A tarpaulin on the roof means a dry house, and that stops the rain. It slows down disease. It allows them to be able to dry their clothes in a dry place, to be able to cook their dinner tonight without rain falling down and putting their fire out. It means that their children can sleep in a stable and safe place tonight without worrying about the children waking up with wet clothing and all the problems that causes with damp and things like that.
So, what else have you been giving people as you go about your work?
Lollies. The other thing that we've been preparing are toolkits that are going to be used for the villagers to be able to do a little bit of self-maintenance rather than waiting on external support. Very simple thing. It's only got a hammer, a couple of bags of nails, a saw, some wire and a pliers so that they can make some homespun sort of fixes. So that when the wind comes or something like that, they're able to look after themselves. A bit more resilience, a bit more self-sufficiency. It lifts their pride in themselves and helps them to stand together as a community.
How do you know which communities to deliver to?
We have a network of national people here that are looking after us, caring for the people in the village. They're connected all through the year. We're only here for a little while, but they know where the damage is. And rapid assessments have been done at a government level, but also by some of the Samaritan's Purse team. We had an advanced team here a few weeks ago now, and they were able to work alongside DSMAC and understand where the most damaged areas are. So we're following the mud map that has been left for us.
And are you finding, though, that you are also just distributing aid as you go, which is not actually, on the list, so to speak?
Yeah. Our mandate is to help everyone in need, anyone in need at all. It doesn't matter whether they're in the village that we were supposed to be going to, if we see something on the side of the road. Like we did yesterday, one of the People's Republic of China tents we noticed was flattened by the wind. And it is our intention before we leave here today to go back and check on them. And that was just something we saw as we went along yesterday.
The Prime Minister of Tonga, Akisi Pohiva, has defended his government's openness and rejected claims that he does not make himself available to the media. Local news organizations have been grumbling for weeks about the lack of accessibility to the Prime Minister. He told Don Wiseman, that is not the case.
If that is the response from the media here in Tonga, there's no merit in it. And I can give you an example. Just last year, our first year in government, I organized three separate media conferences. Each one of these conferences lasted more than an hour. And they were given more than enough time to ask questions. So the claim or the allegation against the Prime Minister's office from the media is not correct. It never happened before for a Prime Minister to give a chance more than 1 hour interview with the media. So what else do they want? Apart from that, we have in the office a media section. Its function is mainly to provide and report to the public on issues and matters of public interest and public importance.
That's fine, Mr. Paheva, but we're now in April. What happened last year is irrelevant at this point. I would suggest to you that in most countries that the leaders are available certainly on a weekly basis, sometimes on a daily basis. I'm sure some journalist in New Zealand speaks to John Key every day of the week. The reason why the journalists want to speak to the people at the top is the people at the top are the ones who really know a junior tucked away in the media section. They want to speak with the leaders.
I know that, but as far as I know, only one request from the media, from one of the media people, they wanted the Prime Minister for a press conference. That was the week before last week. Unfortunately, one of the senior who is responsible for the media did not inform me. I just found out later, and I directed our senior officer in the Ministry of Education to respond. And she already responded. But as far as I know, that was one request. Not only that, but our government, my government, reports important news items, important matters of public interest and public importance every week. So I must tell you, Don, my government still maintains the principles of good governance, and we will continue to uphold all these principles as from now.
I know that you have long professed the importance of good governance and transparency, but it's an accusation from none other than Kalafi Moala, who has long been a colleague of yours, who says that your government has become the most closed government in Tongan history, the most inaccessible.
It is so close to ask himself, because he has been working very closely with Dr. Fred Sevele. Just asking me whether was there a time that Fred gave opportunity to the media for press conference? Not only that, how about the previous government? I'm telling you, Don, it never happened before, and I'm prepared to answer or to respond to any questions, any queries from the public. But it is a matter for the media section in my office to inform me. I'm always prepared to answer and to be accountable to the media and also to the public anytime.
It's all very well, I think, for you to look back at previous governments. And the reality is with Fred Sevele, he hasn't been in government for more than 6 years now. So that becomes irrelevant.
Yes, but I can still recall what actually happened during the regime.
Things have moved on, though, haven't they? You've got more media in Tonga. There's more interest.
Yes.
It's more open. And there are great expectations associated with your government. And people feel, whether it's accurate or not, they feel that you're not meeting them in terms of transparency and openness.
Well, that is from Kalafi, perhaps, but I must tell you now, I'm open, I'm free. Anytime they want me to respond and to, you know, to answer questions, I'm always prepared to do it. But it's very unfortunate if my senior people in the media section in my office fail to inform me of that. But that is a different issue. I'll try to make sure that my media section is responsive to the public.
In the end, of course, you're the leader. You're in charge, aren't you?
Yes.
And with that, we've come to the end of this edition of Focus Asia Pacific from PCJ Radio International. If you'd like to contact the producers of the program, well, I'm sure they'd love to hear from you. The email address is focus@pcjmedia.com. Once again, focus@pcjmedia.com. You can re-listen to this program at any time by visiting the website of PCJ Radio International, which is pcjmedia.com, and just click on the link for Focus Asia Pacific. On behalf of the whole team, I'm Keith Powell, wishing you well. We'll see you again in 7 days' time, but I should remind you that listeners in the Pacific can listen to a 15-minute edition of the program that airs 3 times a day on shortwave and on satellite. You can also get the information from us what the frequencies are and also what the satellite is that you can listen to the program. So until next time, friends, I'm Keith Powell, wishing you all, saying so long and take care. Thank you.